number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loans studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Lay it down. Smack on the ankle.
Come on, back. Nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quicken Loans studios, here's Tony D.
Yeah, we're cruising through the night here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for making us part of your evening. No matter why you're up, we don't really care. Thanks for just listening to us, chilling out. Don't forget, check out the podcast, podcastarena.com, /Tony-D. If you miss any part of the show or want to relive any part of this show, you can go to there and tune into us. We're talking about the college football playoff rankings. Yeah, they like Clemson and Alabama. They like Ohio State and Notre Dame. When will they love Baylor? When will they love Oklahoma State? Well, I guess we'll get to that later on in the weeks when they start facing off against really the more stronger teams in the conference. But one of the things we were talking about was LSU. Where would you put LSU if LSU finishes out, doesn't play in the SEC title game, mind you, but what if LSU were to just sit back and be a one-loss team without a conference championship? Now, you may initially say, yeah, well, they didn't win the SEC. They don't belong in the top four. But hold on. Adam, I think you pointed this out. They're just like Notre Dame.
And Baylor.
Yeah, and Baylor, because they don't have conference championships.
Exactly. I mean, so then you'd have to start stacking up wins against each other. And, you know, if Alabama were to jump Clemson at some point, LSU's only losses to the number one team, and Notre Dame's only losses to the number two team, say. So
I'm
then
telling
you have
you.
To stack up wins, and here's the wins that I put in a decent category for LSU. They beat Mississippi State early in the season by two. Then they didn't really play anybody for a while. Then they beat Florida by seven, which is a good-looking win right now.
Good-looking win right now.
They lost to Alabama by two touchdowns. Now they finish the season with Arkansas at Ole Miss, which I think would be a decent win, a decent enough win at Ole Miss. I mean, it's not as good as it was 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But it's still a decent win. And then they play home against Texas A&M, which has lost all its luster.
Yeah, that's a killer. Because that schedule 2 weeks ago looked really good.
Yes, exactly. That would have, in my opinion, catapulted them over Notre Dame. But and then Notre Dame's wins are Navy. They beat by 17. I don't know.
Temple
for sure. They won by four. I don't know about USC. I mean, that was at home. USC's not that great. They're kind of a middle of the road. I would put a Mississippi win for LSU over the Notre Dame win for USC.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
But then Notre Dame would have a Stanford win at Stanford.
I think this committee would be very reluctant. And I'm going to accuse them of something, and I hate going down this rabbit hole, but I got to say it. I would be very surprised if this committee said LSU over Notre Dame. Two SEC teams. But I think that LSU has a legitimate case. This is one of those situations where the committee goes, guys, are we really going to pull the trigger on this?
Yeah.
Are we really going to come out of this room and say that our top four include an undefeated Clemson team, a one-loss Alabama team that won the SEC title, Ohio State, and the second-place team in the SEC just based on who we like? Not based on the fact that Florida lost, but just on our who we like. Oh, we're going to get hit. But you know what? Last year they did it to Baylor and TCU, and people were scratching their heads as to how you could have how could you have those teams so high, so high, so high, so high, and then boom, nothing. And they came up with their reasoning. They liked the way Ohio State looked at the end of the season. There was no question about it. Ohio State looked great. They looked better. Baylor and TCU didn't have a championship. And I know people will say that that didn't matter. And I know the argument back and forth for it. But I do believe that the committee was saying to the Big 12, it is not our job to determine your champion. If you want to present us a champion, present us a champion. Our job is to determine about if any one of your teams, either one, is good enough to play in our top four. Are they good enough? And we don't think so. But you, if you had presented us a champion, maybe it counts as a half a thought. But our job was to determine the four best teams in college football. LSU is a very good football team. And you could make the case that they're better than Notre Dame. But I just don't think they pull that trigger.
Yeah, I don't either.
It'd be so controversial.
Another team that Pete Futek brought up was Oklahoma. I don't see any scenario where Oklahoma's getting into this playoff.
I don't think a one-loss Big 12 team is getting in.
No, and I don't even say, I think Baylor, Oklahoma State, as long as they beat Oklahoma and then say lose to TCU or to Oklahoma State, you know, whoever they lose to each other, I would put them in over Oklahoma. Oklahoma lost to Texas.
Yeah, you can't lose to Texas.
Texas, they're awful. Charlie Strong has no control over that organization right now.
Here's why I don't a one-loss team in the Big 12 is not going to get in. I mean, barring major chaos, this snapshot of this week is saying that undefeated Baylor is still sixth. And Oklahoma State, which beat TCU, is eighth. They don't really like these unbeaten Big 12 teams right now. How in the world are they going to like a one-loss Big 12 team as a top four team, barring chaos?
And what I don't understand is, how do they have Baylor, who hasn't played anybody yet?
Anybody.
They haven't played anybody. How do they have them at 8-0 behind a 9-0 Oklahoma State team who beat TCU? That makes no sense in my head.
I would love to know why, when it comes to the eyeball test, tell me the reason. Because there's obviously a reason when they watch Baylor play, they like certain things about them more than they like Oklahoma State. I get that. But Baylor's snapshot includes one game with Jarrett Stidham at quarterback. That's it. The snapshot includes all of Seth Russell's work and Jarrett Stidham at quarterback for one game, and they like that look better than Oklahoma State after they beat TCU, a team that the committee seemed to enjoy, seemed to like. Maybe not as a number one or number two team, but again, they were up there in the rankings. They liked TCU. TCU gets beat by this team. And again, I go back to what I've been saying for a long time about college football rankings, and I'm hoping to get some converts on this. Do not say at the beginning of the season, these preseason polls are meaningless. You need to realize they matter. They really, really matter. They just don't matter like you think they matter. No, a preseason poll does not determine the national championship. No, a preseason poll does not award anybody anything. But what a preseason poll does, and a week one poll, and a week two poll, what they do is they give the season some sort of guidance and some sort of perspective. That's what you're getting. Alabama got a lot of mileage out of beating Wisconsin because Wisconsin was ranked at the beginning of the season. And Alabama got a lot of credit for beating Georgia when Georgia was ranked. And the same thing about Texas A&M when Texas A&M was ranked. They were able to carry those wins despite a bad loss to Ole Miss. They were able to survive a bad loss to Ole Miss. And I'm not saying, don't look at the score. That was a 5-turnover game for Alabama. And I'm telling you, it wasn't as close as that score indicates. But the reason why they didn't suffer for it is because Mississippi was ranked at the time. They had beaten Wisconsin. They rebounded against number 8 Georgia. They rebounded again 2 weeks later and beat number 9 Texas A&M. And while those wins today don't look like they matter because Georgia's kind of in the toilet and Texas A&M is as good as we thought, at the time, those little tiny numbers next to those teams' names mattered a lot to Alabama. They matter to Notre Dame. They matter to Clemson. They matter to Iowa. They do. And you're starting to see it now. You're starting to see this play out where, well, we better hope so-and-so stays alive. So-and-so gets better. Stanford is 8-1. How many people on Labor Day thought Stanford was going to overcome a loss to Northwestern? Oh, well, all of a sudden, Northwestern's ranked. All of a sudden, we woke up to the idea that, hey, Pat Fitzgerald's doing something good. Notre Dame, Northwestern getting ranked really helped Stanford's cause. These things matter.
What about this scenario? And I'm sitting here looking at the college football playoff rankings. What if this happens? Because and this is going back to LSU where we started this conversation. What if Florida beats Alabama in the SEC championship game? They go to the college football playoff. LSU beat Florida, and yep. If LSU's 10-1, then you have a whole nother,
Yeah, you can't deny Florida an entry in there. They won the SEC. You're not taking them out. That makes LSU's case really, really, really strong. Really, really strong. Ooh, interesting stuff. All right, 800-777-2907. If you want to get into that conversation, we threw a lot at you, I know, and it can get confusing. We throw a lot of hypotheticals. That's what kind of makes college football fun. But if you're following this closely, if you're listening and following this closely, what are your thoughts on where this committee is heading? 800-777-2907. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, I want to get into the Missouri stuff. I know I'm a day late on what was happening there, but the ramifications for sports of what happened with the Missouri football team. We'll get to that coming up at the bottom of the hour. It is Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
I know as we work the overnight, we are trickling into November 11th. Happy Veterans Day, by the way. But on November 10th, the Edmund Fitzgerald sunk in the Great Lakes 40 years ago. This is Gordon Lightfoot and his tale of the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. It's a pretty haunting song. It is a long song. I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's like 7 minutes long, isn't it?
Yeah, I want to say like 651 or something like that.
It's pretty. It was a hit in 1976. So, and this ship went down 40 years ago in 1975. So this was a hit immediately. Like this guy put this out quickly. 29 people died in this ship, an iron ore ship that had sunk November 10th, 1975. If you listen to the words of this song, it is really kind of haunting. And it's amazing. So there you go. Edmund Fitzgerald, 40 years ago, November 10th. And it's a very detailed song. Like Gordon Lightfoot is like, and they went down and had a dinner and they went back upstairs and the winds were all blowing and then they laid down and it's just really detailed song. DJs would play this and then just kind of disappear for a while and then come back, go do some stuff. You always had the stash of long DJ songs that you could go, oh, I gotta go take care of some things. I'm gonna come back. I remember my first job in radio. I was working at an AM station. It was a news talk station. And my job was morning. I was morning news and sports producer. So I got in and I would run the board a little bit for the overnights. And then I would really go in. I'd be in the newsroom and I was kind of like a gopher. I'd get sound and cut copy and rip scripts. But while I was doing the overnight stuff, the DJ taught me how to be a DJ at the rock station. And I'm just a kid. I just like, oh, man, this is a great gig. I love this. So he'd come in and he'd go, hey, he used to call me T-Rock for, I don't know why, but he'd go, T-Rock, come here, man. And I'd go, he goes, you want to learn how to do this? Come here, yeah, He'd show me how to do it. I'm just like, oh, this is great. It's fascinating. And then one time he was like, all right, you do got to do this, man. I'll be right back. He was gone for like 45 minutes. And I didn't know what to do. I was just playing songs. And I just kept playing songs and I followed the log and I was playing songs. And he had me doing that for like a couple of weeks. And then one time in the middle of the night, the phone rang and it was the program director. And I answered it. He's like, what are you doing in there? I'm like, Phil left me in here. That was the end of that. No more girlfriend visits in the middle of the night for the crazy popular DJ. I think I spoiled that fun. But Edmund Fitzgerald was one of the long carts. That was the one you could play and just go take care of whatever you got to do for about 7 or 8 minutes. Nice long song, but a very good tribute by Gordon Lightfoot. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up, I do want to get into the Missouri situation. I wasn't on last night when the news broke in the early morning Monday of Tim Wolf resigning, but I don't want to get into so much the politics of all that because I know we all kind of differ on the protest and what the protest was looking for. I know on Sunday night, I was very confused and I did more research and, you know, I got a little bit more detail as to what they were looking for and the resignation. But I'm looking for, and what I'm looking at is, boy, that was a very powerful statement by the football team and what this could mean down the line. And do athletes today, are they seeing this? Are they watching this? And are they realizing the power that they have? Because what I think happened at Missouri has less to do with that poor kid's hunger strike. I was blown away how quickly this resignation happened once the football team got involved. I mean, there was a kid who wasn't eating food, and that university president wasn't budging. But as soon as the football team was like, that's it, we're done, then it was quick. And believe me, if I'm on that football team, and if I'm a coach of a football team, I am taking notice of that. If I'm on a basketball team, I am taking notice of that. Any revenue-producing sport, football and basketball, some places baseball, not so much, but mostly men's basketball and football. Take notice of what happened at Missouri because things could be changing your way. And I'm wondering if this is now the ushering in a dawn of a new era when it comes to the athletes and the power that they now know they have. We'll reset that for you coming up at the bottom of the hour. Again, our telephone number, 800-777-2907. Also, hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, with your thoughts on what we've been buzzing about tonight, including the NFL Week 10, our top five, bottom five, and the committee rankings that have come in. If you're a Big 12 fan, is this sitting okay with you? Do you think in the end they will give you a spot with an undefeated team from your conference? 800-777-2907. It's Tony D through the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, Lil, hear me out on this. The Missouri football players that were participating in this protest refusing to do any football activities, play the game or whatnot, until the president of the school resigned, got an immediate response from the president of the school, who resigned within 24 or 48 hours after the kids announced that they were going to be participating in this. I want to say it was 24, because, I mean, on Sunday they announced it, Gary Pinkel supported it, and then I woke up Monday morning to the news that he had resigned.
Yeah, it was within 24 hours.
They were going to not play a game at against BYU at Arrowhead Stadium. Now, the graduate student then went on the hunger strike, had gone on the hunger strike for a week, and didn't elicit any type of response from the president other than his refusal to step down. But the football team got involved, and again, quickly, this went from, I'm not resigning, to, yeah, I'm resigning. So I asked the question, do you think that this is something that players around the country are noticing and realizing how much power they really do have? And I'm not talking about big-time causes. I'm talking about, we want better this, or we want better health care, or we want scholarships to be guaranteed, or we want the transfer rules changed, or we want to get paid, or any of those type of things. Dennis on Twitter at Tony D Radio, to answer your question, are other teams looking at Missouri and are about to discover the power of protest? No, this is a one-timer. I don't know, man. I don't know. I agree with the notion that it takes a lot of guts to not play, and you better be sure that you have got the support of your coaching staff and the players around you. That makes sense. But I do wonder how many of these students now are starting to talk about how quickly the Missouri program got action just by voicing their support for it and saying, we are not participating. Remember, we are in a different era now in college athletics. The barn door is wide open to the idea of revenue, to better health care, to better transfer rules, to all these other things that have been denied student athletes over the years. We are now in a new era where the eyes of the student athletes are now wide open as to both the economic and basically the working conditions of being a student athlete sometimes, and that it can be done in a better way. I mean, should a student athlete lose his scholarship for no reason at all at half these places? Should there be a comprehensive health care plan for student athletes who get hurt and need care much longer than just being a student at the school? You know that Shabazz Napier was able to throw out the idea that, you know, we student athletes are starving half the time. We only get a certain amount of food and we don't have the money to go get other food. So whereas other student athletes can call up and order a pizza to their room, most of us are broke, don't have or can't get jobs while we're in season. So it's not like we can just go run down to Denny's, a 24-hour diner, and go get a Moons Over My Hammy at 2 o'clock in the morning. Some of us are flat broke. And that opened the eyes to a lot of people who started saying, wait a minute, there's a better way. So at a time where Northwestern students tried to get unionized, and at a time where more and more student athletes are realizing, hey, there's so much money and I'm not getting a dime of this, and I think I can get some money if I play my cards right, I'm thinking that, yes, they are paying attention to what Missouri said and did and saw the results and said, this is something we can pursue. I'll tell you right now, I am very impressed at the unity of what they did. I am very impressed in the solidarity of what they did. That is not easy. That is not easy because you don't know where that's going to go. You know, that kid who called the hunger strike. If you're going to do that, you got to be willing to go as far and deep into that as you can. Even though I don't like the idea of dying for this. But with the football players, it wasn't that severe. But with the football players, if they were going to do this, they couldn't stop in Wednesday and go, we thought this was a good idea, but it's not a good idea. We got to get ready for BYU. No, you can't. You got to say, we're not playing any more games at all. And for some of us, it may be the only thing. For some of us, it may be the only thing, the only football we've got left. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. So I'm just throwing it out there, this idea that we may be heading into kind of a new era in college athletics, especially with the idea of the protesting athlete or the athlete that can be unified. The only thing that I would caution against this idea, is that the reason the Missouri protest really was able to have an impact was because Gary Pinkel was on board with it. I think if Gary Pinkel had said, any of you that want to protest, protest, but I'm going to be playing on Saturday with a group of players that are going to be here regardless of talent level. So if you guys want to go not play football, don't play football, but your positions will be taken up by our depth chart, even if it makes us weaker, we're still going. He did not do that. He supported this and was behind this. And that is, I think, one of the main reasons it had such impact, that there was a real threat of the team losing the game. Now, transfer that to what I was saying earlier about the idea of, okay, so a bunch of students want to get better living conditions. Do they go on strike? Well, okay. So let's say a group of athletes at State U, we'll just call it State U, go, okay, we're going to protest and we're going to boycott all football activities until we get more money in a stipend. Well, the coach is going to say, well, those of you who don't show up to practice on Monday are off the team. Certain kids go, nope, we're going to protest this. Certain kids realize, okay, they're just going to replace us and the program's going to still go on. I'm showing up to practice on Monday, and then you lose its luster. But if you have a coach that says, I want my kids to get a better stipend, and I want my kids, and I want the conference to take note of this, I'm going to support my kids not playing. Wow, that becomes a nightmare for the NCAA and whatever conference those schools are in. Missouri was going to cough up $1 million to BYU for the, if they forfeited that game. Plus, they were going to have to pay Arrowhead Stadium because they had rented it out. You don't just not show up and it's all good. You are going to pay a penalty there. Ticket prices, ticket would have to be refunded by those who bought them. And a number of other big, maybe the SEC comes down and fines the school. So a lot was on the line, and the football team sort of was the catalyst that helped Tim Wolf resign. I mean, it was quick. I mean, like I said, 24 hours. 800-777-2907. I will say this. I give the hunger strike guy, Mr. Braxton, I think his name was.
Butler.
I give him a lot of credit. That's not easy. I went 24 hours once without eating. I thought I was going to die. A lot of it was probably me over-exaggerating. But I remember laying down going, I haven't eaten. I'm not going to make it. That was 8 days. Drinking just water. Got to take it easy. But nevertheless. Boy, I will say this, and I don't usually get outside the sports realm very often, but as a journalism major, that journalism teacher, professor, assistant professor, who just resigned tonight because she ordered muscle to remove a student reporter, yeah, well done. You know how quick the internet can ruin your life? It's pretty much instantaneous. She thought, oh, I'm going to get this reporter off this campus. I'm going to get this reporter out of this thing. I don't want this reporter covering this event. I'm going to tell him to leave. He doesn't leave. Then she gets aggravated. Then he doesn't leave. He says, I have the right to be here. She gets more aggravated. He says, I'm not going anywhere. She then yells for muscle to come and take this guy out. So he has to leave the premises. It's all on camera. It quickly goes viral. It goes on all the major news stories across the country. Her Twitter feed is inundated with so much hate, she has to shut it down. And guess what? She had to resign. She offered an apology, but I saw one column where the guy wrote, apologies shouldn't be accepted. They weren't taking one from Tim Wolf. So it's just created this awful, the poor lady was making, I don't know, $57,000 a year, I read. She has to give up that job because she got a little crazy with a student reporter and decided to bring some muscle in to take him out. Well done on the whole freedom of the press thing, by the way. I'm sure you're teaching your students some great knowledge on that as a journalist.
The other thing was, I mean, earlier in that video, there was another teacher doing, in my opinion, worse than her. She, you know, that the first teacher got right in his face and just stood in his face and was blocking his camera. And then all of a sudden, a whole group of students just started like moving everybody forward and pushing that guy back out of their circle.
Why were they mad? Why were they mad at reporters just covering a celebratory protest?
That's the thing. No,
they were happy.
It made no sense. They kept yelling they want their privacy. And I don't know who
privacy?
They want.
You're out in a public quad exactly. Screaming your heads off.
The whole video just really actually infuriated me because it's
sure.
Like all these people wanted the entire time was their First Amendment right to say what they want. They wanted to speak their mind. Now, as soon as the media comes in with their First Amendment right, no, you can't. No, we don't want it. We don't want your people here. We don't want your media, your cameras, your writing. We don't want all that here. It was bullcrap.
It reminds me of the people running for president. And every year we get a group of people that run for president that are not a part of the political process, right? They're like a Donald Trump or a Herman Cain mm-hmm. or, you know, people along those lines. And then as soon as they get into this, the press starts looking into their backgrounds. Press starts looking into everything that they are, everything that they do. And then they just complain. Where have you been living in a cave? We've been doing this to political candidates for 20 years. Like, you know the game when you get into it. You know, you may not like them digging into your past, but you're going to get dug into your past. If you're going to have protests, the media is going to come. If you're going to have celebratory events, the media is going to cover that too. It was a big story. It was a big, big story. This wasn't a private gathering. And then afterwards, it's like, oh, we're just going to go celebrate in private. This was a whole school erupting in euphoria. That's going to send reporters to the scene. They know why, but they're going to want reaction. They're going to want to talk to people. This woman should know that. And then for her to see a member of the press and then demand somebody come and take them out.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything more deplorable from someone who's in the media or teaches media. That this is the appropriate way to deal with freedom of the press. Is that if you believe that they're not on your side, or you may have a hint that they might not be on your side, that the best way to handle that is to cause them physical harm. And you know what? She apologized, but I don't have sympathy for her.
Not at all.
I'm all out. I'm all out of this stuff. Because this is the world they wanted to create. They wanted to create this world where there is no room at all for any of this ever, even if you apologize. One strike and your life is over. That's the rule they wanted to create. That's the world they wanted. They got it. She is done. She is done. And I don't have any sympathy for her because the clock, the cameras are always on in those situations, and you better be smart.
And the thing
Lord
was,
knows I've made ridiculous, dumb mistakes in my life, but you know what? I can't imagine wanting to cause physical harm over somebody who is covering an event. That's silly.
The thing that didn't make any sense was, like you said, you know, you have to know the cameras are always on. He had the camera in her
right.
face. Like,
and she went to grab it and yeah. all that other stuff.
Like, come
it's crazy.
On. And the
come
worst
on.
Part was the kid in the first part of the video where, you know, the kid was there with his camera and he said he was, you know, a reporter. He was a young kid. It wasn't like this was an old guy there, you know.
Right. I think he was a student reporter.
Yeah, he was a student reporter. I don't know that he was from Mizzou. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Oh.
But he was a student reporter, you know, trying to get the story, trying to get interviews from, you know, happy people. And he said that. And they're just like, oh, we don't. You know, it was
he
ridiculous.
Wearing an Illini shirt?
No. He
was he from Illinois?
Could have been. But he didn't show it. He did not
right.
show it.
Gotcha. All right, 800-777-2907. You want your thoughts in on that as we continue through the night on Yahoo Sports Radio. We'll talk a little NFL and the Andrew Luck situation next.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Oh, by the way, you know, I tried to watch a little of the GOP debate tonight, just a little bit. I can't. I just can't watch that stuff. And not that I don't like politics, because I'm not that political. But one of the things that I learned very quickly in this business, that I cover sports for a living. And in sports, I learned to deal with a lot of people that don't see things with a wide perspective when it comes to their team. They see their guy, and they can attack their guy, but you can't attack their guy. And it's kind of that rule. And you're dealing with just passionate people, and they don't always see the truth. And people who cover politics, they're the exact same way. Exact same way. And so I learned that a long time ago. So I knew that when I watch it, it's very, very hard for me not to see it as sports, as just a bunch of people on the same – are vying for the same team. And they may have some differences, but it's still the same team. So I'm a bad parent in that regard because my kid – my son is like, he really wants to learn how the political process, and this is kind of it's kind of the first election he's really into, where he's learning about the issues and stuff. And he's got a dad that's like, it's all like sports, man. It's not even worth your time. I just try not to be like that, but I can't help it sometimes. All right. 800-777-2907. The number. Andrew Luck is out for a number of weeks with a lacerated kidney. Good Lord. We talked about this and how it affects the AFC South and whether or not you're going to see another team kind of come up and rise up. I don't think you are, but I do think that the Colts situation says a lot about where we are with the backup quarterbacks right now. The Colts are confident in Matt Hasselbeck as a 40-year-old backup. This still is amazing to me. The evidence just continues to pile up on the lacking quarterback situation in this league. And this is not against Matt Hasselbeck. He's got himself a fine career. I mean, listen, he is a backup quarterback at 40 years old, and he can still have a job because there aren't very many good backup quarterbacks who are 25, 26, 30, 34, 35. No. I think it says so much about this league about the fact that Matt Hasselbeck, the Colts are confident that will keep rolling along. Now, I don't know if it will or not. I mean, you look at the Colts schedule, Falcons, Steelers. But other than that, it's Jacksonville and the Texans and the Titans, Buccaneers. So it's not like the Colts schedule is loaded. Houston's schedule is loaded. So I think the Colts are going to be okay. I would really make sure Andrew Luck comes back, though, very, very healthy, if you're gonna win this division and make the playoffs. Andrew Luck could be out 2 to 6 weeks. If Matt Hasselbeck is efficient enough, let that be closer to the 6 weeks than it is the two. Don't rush back from a lacerated kidney. That sounds really bad, doesn't it? That could be really nothing. But I don't know much about medical. I just say, when I hear the word lacerated, I cringe. When I hear kidney, I get really nervous. So you can only imagine lacerated kidney. What is that? What it's kind of doing to my insides right now. I'm like, oh, no, no. Lacerated kidney. But a 40-year-old quarterback, one of the better ones in the league, is going to help the Colts get through this. He might be the best thing to happen for them. They might make the playoffs, and they may just sit back and go, hey, you know what? We had a pretty good backup quarterback. He went like 6-1 in 7 games he had to start this year. He's already 2-0. Luck was already out for 2 games this year early, and he went 2-0 in those games. I don't think Houston's got the horses, and I know Tennessee and Jacksonville don't. You lose your quarterback in a tight division that's decent, but not now. All right. Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Don't forget, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio and check us out on Facebook. Our top five and bottom five are up between Adam and I after week 9 in the National Football League. Coming up in the next hour, Mike Salarte will join us in Charlotte. We'll talk about the Carolina Panthers, who are off to an 8-0 start. Also, Pete Futek coming up as well as he talks the college football rankings. It's all coming up as we go through the night on Yahoo Sports Radio.